5 win.
Boo. Blue Jays beat the Royals last night 6-5, as you just heard, up in Canada. And they are our hated neighbors to the north. Everybody knows that. Big time rivalry between the two. Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive and Bullitt, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Royals opened that 3-game set against the Blue Jays last night, 6-5 loss. They're up 2-0, top of the first, but Jonathan Bolin, making his first start of the season, couldn't hold it, and he struggled. 2 2/3, gave up 4 runs, 6 hits, gave up 3 home runs, walked a couple. Matt Cotrero, the manager of the Royals, Bolin getting the start in place of the injured Alec Marsh, who's normal Royals' fifth starter. Cotrero on Bolin's performance.
Just struggled getting the pitches where he needed to with 2 strikes. You know, most of the damage was when he was ahead in the count. But he threw the ball, you know, well. He looked like he wasn't guiding the ball or anything like that. It just didn't execute as well as he should have or wanted to with 2 strikes.
Justin Turner with 2 home runs. I didn't even know he played for the Blue Jays. He's bounced around. He was Dodgers for a long, long time, and then he went to the Red Sox. He's with the Blue Jays, hit 2 homers against Bolin, and the Royals are 17-13 with the loss. The Blue Jays now 15-15. Game 2 of the 3-game set is at 6:07 tonight in Toronto. Let's see, who's on the hill for the Royals tonight?
It is.
I'll pull that back up. I think people probably want to know who's the starting pitcher for today. Let me see here if I can get
Reagan's
computer to
I'm
work.
I'm pretty sure it's Reagan's.
Cole Reagan's at the start. 1-2 ERA at 3.90. He'll be on the hill for the Royals. He's been pretty good all year long, except for his last start. All right, I got some local sports information. And Dusty, we yet again another coach to talk about. We have a lot of coaches that have resigned or stepped down, and now we have a volleyball coach stepping down.
Yeah, after 9 seasons at the helm, Lakeside volleyball coach Michelle Brummett is stepping down. She led the Lady Knights to an overall record of 190 and 118 and 72-28 in the Northern Plains League. 6 of the 9 seasons she coached, the Lady Knights had winning records. Their best stretch was from 2020 to 21, compiling a record of 58-13 and 19-2 in the NPL in those 2 years. In 2021, she led the Lady Knights to their first and only state tournament appearance in program history. They went 33-6 and 10-1 in league play, went 2-1 at the 1A D1 state tournament that year. Losing some key players at graduation, Lakeside went 20-13 2 years ago, and then this past season they went 16-19 while integrating multiple freshmen at the varsity level. So again, Michelle Brummett stepping down as the head coach of the Lady Knights. Hope to talk to her at some point today, and we'll hear from her hopefully on the Sports Ticket tomorrow. So that's the plan, to talk with Michelle about her career and her successful run with the Lady Knights volleyball team. So again, Michelle Brummett stepping down with the Lakeside volleyball squad. Taking a look at some other local sports notes here. Monday results, baseball. Soap and Luke's Lincoln getting a sweep over Minneapolis, 14-2-5 in the first game, 6-3 in game 2. And then in softball, Minneapolis sweeping Sylvan Lucas, 14-3-6, 17-1-5 in the 2 games there in Sylvan Grove on Monday. In high school golf, Clay Center Invitational, Concordia finished second as a team, and Luke Donovan of Concordia was the top finisher from the area, tying for second place there. Full golf results can be found at ncksports.com. More golf coming up today, the Lakeside Invitational, the San afternoon at 1 o'clock, as Lakeside, St. John's, Tipton, Rock Hills, Pike Valley, and Southern Cloud will be competing there from the area. And then Concordia back at it today at the Marysville Invitational at 1 o'clock. Track and field, it's a busy Tuesday for track, as the Logan Invitational this afternoon at 3 o'clock, Lakeside, Osborne, and Thunder Ridge competing there. Minneapolis Invitational this afternoon as well, St. John's, Smith Center, and Concordia. And then at the Teskin Invitational, Tipton, Rock Hill, Sylvan Lucas, Lincoln, Pike Valley, and Southern Cloud all competing there. Those are all starting at 3 o'clock this afternoon with the regular field events, and then track events to follow. Track and field here today. And then in baseball and softball, Marysville at Concordia in the NCKL here this afternoon. So let's look at what's going on in local sports here today. And again, you can always find the latest in local sports at ncksports.com.
All right. And I know you hope to get a conversation interview with Coach Brummett, so we look forward to that down here in the near future as well. And back to the Royals for a moment. Salvador Perez was a late scratch because of some back tightness. And so Freddie Fermin played catcher last night, hit a home run, had a couple of hits and a home run. So he did just fine in start of Salvador Perez. Well, yesterday the Chiefs reached an agreement with tight end Travis Kelce on a new 2-year contract. He is set to make $34.25 million with $17 million fully guaranteed in 2024, most of the rest guaranteed on the third day of the 2025 league year. Kelsey's new deal effectively gives him a $4 million raise for 2024, as he was originally slated to make $13 million this coming season. According to some, he is now the highest paid tight end in the National Football League. It's certainly well deserved. Brad Veach, a GM of the Chiefs, on the move to take care of Travis Kelsey.
It's hard to put into words what Travis means to this organization, this city, and was certainly a priority to adjust his contract for us, and it was something that was important for Clark. So very fitting that Travis is now the highest paid tight end, and you know, in these 2 years. Again, just a really special day and moment for this organization to once again recognize arguably one of the greatest tight ends to ever do it.
I don't think that's arguable. He is one of the greatest tight ends to do it. The question arguably would be, is he the best tight end ever? And he's still got time to add to his book of pages. Pages in his book, chapters to his book. His career is not over. You know, you look back to last season, he struggled a little bit, and there's no doubt he was hurt, and he missed the first game of the season. I don't know if he was even close to 100% all year long, to be quite frank. And the best thing that the Chiefs did and the best thing that Travis Kelsey did, and I think you could say, you don't know, but I think you could say that if Travis Kelsey was a selfish individual, the Chiefs wouldn't have won the Super Bowl last year. Why would I say that? Well, let's go back. The Chiefs beat the Bengals at Arrowhead to clinch the AFC West. They knew they were going to be a 3 seed. They knew they were locked into that spot. Travis Kelsey is only a few yards away from getting 1,000 yards, which would have continued his streak of consecutive seasons, 1,000 yards for a tight end. He only needed 16 yards, I think it was. So he could easily, in fact, some of his teammates were encouraging him, just play enough to get a catch or two, get your 16 yards, get the 1,000, you're good, and you sit the rest of the way. And Travis Kelsey talked over with Coach Reed, and it's like, no, man, I'm good. There's no need to risk anything here. He put the team ahead of himself. He also knew his own body. And there's no doubt that he looked rejuvenated. He looked fresher in the playoffs. And I think taking that Week 18 game off, which was the 17th game of the season, but Week 18 against the Chargers, when the Chiefs had nothing to play for, was the best thing ever happened to Kelsey, and is the best thing that happened to the Chiefs. Because if Kelsey ends up playing, he goes through all these warm-ups, and then he plays, who knows, 15 snaps and finally gets his 2 catches for 16 yards and plays a quarter, quarter and a half, is he ready to go for the playoffs? Now, possibly he could have been, but that's an example of him putting the organization or the team ahead of his own personal goals that most people, I'll tell you what, I think at least half the league would have said, I want my yardage, maybe more. And so that's what sets Travis Kelsey apart. And I think when Kelsey was younger, maybe early on, I think he would have probably tried that. But now he puts winning above everything else. And he wants to win so badly. And yes, sometimes his body language isn't the greatest on the sideline. I get that. And so there's a fine line between showing passion and being, you know, bad body language. And I will say, I don't think his body language really is that bad ever on the field, per se. I think it's one of those things where it is some frustration comes out, as we saw. We saw Mahomes do it last year as well. And that's going to happen when you want to win so badly. At the same time, you know, you're the leader. People look up to you. So if it's acceptable for you to just go ahead and do whatever the heck you want and get all frustrated all the time and do it on a regular basis, now you're going to have a problem on your team. So these are isolated incidents that have happened. But the bottom line is the Chiefs won a Super Bowl again. And Travis Kelsey, do you think he cares about being 16 yards shy of 1,000 after hoisting Lombardi? No. And he's dating Taylor Swift, for crying out loud. He's got his own podcast. He's going to host his own game show. I mean, this guy has everything going for him. And on top of that, now he has a new two-year extension, or 2 years renegotiated, or whatever you want to call it. There are people like, is this a new deal? Is it an extension? It sounds like they just reworked the final 2 years and gave him more money, which is fine. So he is under contract here now through at least through 2025. Yeah. Some people reported that technically it's through 2027. I'm not sure. I don't have access to the contract. But the bottom line is this. He is taken care of. Chris Jones has now been taken care of. Mahomes, you know, will always be taken care of as long as he's healthy. And now Travis Kelsey, all this time, people are like, oh, he should have held out. He should have done this. He's so underpaid. He believed that he'd be taken care of. And that goes back to the organization. It goes back to the top of the organization. It goes to Clark Hunt. It goes to Andy Reid, Brett Veach, Mark Donovan. That, you know what? We're going to take care of you. It might take a little bit of time, but we're going to take care of you. And the Chiefs took care of Travis Kelsey yesterday.
Yeah, it's a situation where the you recognize the top people that you have to take care of, right? Yeah. And I'd say Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce are probably number one and two on that list, especially offensively.
Yes.
And so if you make sure that they're good and you can roll with them, as long as you can let that happen, right? As long as they're healthy enough to do it, as long as they're producing enough to do it and give them what they want and what they deserve, which Travis Kelce deserves to be the highest paid tight end in the NFL. There's no question about that. So, you know, you go out and do that. And you know, when you make these kind of moves, you know, going in, once you start winning like you are, you're not going to be able to keep everybody around. So you identify the ones that you do need to keep around and you take care of them, get them paid and keep them happy and in your system and try to keep this thing running as long as you can, because you know, contrary to what some people have said during this whole time, you know, the window is still open and you keep that open as long as you can by, you know, signing the guys, keeping the guys that you know you have to take care of. And then, you know, when you lose a guy, you fill it in. When you lose L'Jarius Sneed, you find somebody to take his place. When you lose Tyrann Mathieu, you find Justin Reed. You know, you're going to find guys that are going to take the spots of these other guys that have been so key and important during this run and stretch of winning Super Bowls. But in the end, you can't keep them all. And so you identify that, and it's exciting to have Travis Kelce be one of those guys. And it is, you know, he does deserve just a ton of credit for going ahead and not being a malcontent with his contract. And, you know, and Chris Jones wasn't necessarily that. He sat out a game, but it's like you didn't ever have to worry about that with Travis Kelce like you did with Chris Jones. And so, you know, he definitely gets that credit for that. And it's pretty obvious that he is here in Kansas City to win and to be a champion. That's all it comes down to.
In fairness to Chris Jones, him missing training camp is not as big a deal as Kelce missing training camp, because the offense is more, there's more details. Mm-hmm. I mean, Chris Jones, you know what he does, so forth and so on. But you know, working with new receivers, this and that, you know, Chris Jones, he'll play inside, he'll play on the edge. Him missing training camp, I don't think is as important as Kelce missing and holding out with training camp. Now, granted, Kelce can miss the first week or two of training camp, maybe it's no big deal and come in and be fine, but that's not the way he is. But he had seven straight 1,000-yard seasons, and then last year fell 18 or 16 yards shy. And then in the playoffs, of course, he just took it to another level. Patrick Mahomes put out there on social media last night, he said, "I told you I'll never let him leave. Congrats to my guy, Travis Kelce." And, of course, in the win over the Ravens in Baltimore, Kelce had 11 catches, 116 yards, and then 9 catches, 93 yards in the Super Bowl win over the 49ers. He played his best football at the end when it was most important, when the lights were the brightest. And Travis Kelce is no doubt going to be a Hall of Famer, and this is a guy that got compensated. Now, this is just a reworking of a two-year contract that puts him to 2025, okay? So some people are trying to report that it was a 2 years tacked on. It's not.
No.
So he's signed through 2025. So after next year, if he does great, you might have to do something again, because you don't want him going in his final year of his contract. But at the same time, then he'll be certainly older. He's 34 right now. He would be 36, I think, at the end of his current deal. And you know, I've said for a while the Chiefs need to find an heir apparent to a successor for Travis Kelce at tight end. He just can't keep playing at that level over and over, and everybody admits, even Travis Kelce, that he wasn't quite himself last year. And Father Time is undefeated. Father Time will win no matter what. It eventually catches up to people. And I think the Chiefs certainly are aware of that. They're not stupid. And getting to Jared Wiley, the TCU tight end, you know, there's 2 years where he can maybe learn under Travis Kelce, and maybe he can turn into being the tight end of the future for the Kansas City Chiefs. We shall see. Maybe not. But they at least have a guy that you can learn from. I think it was Jody Fortson, if I want to say this correctly. Maybe I forgot. It was a different tight end. But a guy that's no longer with the Chiefs said that Travis Kelce was the greatest leader he's ever played with, and he was a tremendous mentor and taught him so many things about route running and doing this and doing that. Now that's development, maturity over the years with Travis Kelce. There's no doubt about that. By the way, his brother Jason, big news yesterday, he's going to be on Monday Night NFL Countdown.
Nice.
Which he will be very good at that.
Absolutely.
So that's the Kelce brothers have got the world by the tail. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Well, when will it come crashing down? When Taylor breaks Travis's heart, or Travis breaks Taylor's heart, and then she puts a whole album together hating on Kelce. Who knows? In 30 seconds, take a look at the NBA and NHL playoffs.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Did you know that we sell tires? We also perform alignments and all the other services that go along with them. We handle all the top brands, extras like road hazard warranty, complimentary tire rotations, and complimentary tire repairs are available for purchase on most tires. Right now, we are offering $80 off when you buy a set of four. Call or stop by Kiever Brothers Automotive for fast, friendly tire services today. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at KieverBrothers.com.
Difference of 2 seconds, the game clock and the shot clock.
Worst case scenario, we're going to overtime.
Jokic a screen, Murray to try to break the tie.
No time now by the Lakers, they got to go.
James, a bump, a feed, a print shot, no! Zeroes on the clock, the Nuggets advance!
Denver Nuggets eliminate the LA Lakers. Welcome back to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Jamal Murray, who was a questionable decision. He was questionable. Game time decision with a calf strain, was fantastic last night. He had 32.7 assists. He made 5 of his 10 3-pointers. He scored 12 fourth quarter points, including 9 within the final 4 minutes. Lakers had an 8-point lead with 5 minutes to go. Couldn't hold on to it. Second time in the series, Jamal Murray's hit the late game-winning shot to propel the Nuggets to victory. They wrapped the series 4-1 over the Lakers, and they send Anthony Davis and also LeBron James fishing, as they like to say on TNT. Murray is the fourth player in NBA history to hit 2 go-ahead shots inside the final 5 seconds in the same postseason. He is the only player to do it in the same series. And if he has one more game winner the rest of the playoffs, that will be a new NBA record.
Yeah.
And they could go deep in the playoffs, no doubt. Murray with 32, Jokic 25 points, 20 rebounds. Nuggets win 108-106. Nuggets will move on to face the Timberwolves in the second round. They faced off against each other last year, if you remember correctly. Timberwolves are a team that they're a talented team, and they're getting better and better. I think that's going to be a heck of a series, and the T-Wolves have size to deal with Jokic. They've got Gobert, and they've got Karl Anthony Towns, and so there's interesting matchups between the Nuggets and the T-Wolves, and keep an eye on Caldwell Pope's ankle injury that he suffered last night and Murray's calf strain. So, you know, I'm not sitting here thinking it's automatic the Nuggets are going to the Western Conference Finals. The Oklahoma City Thunder use a 27-18 fourth quarter to pull away for a 97-89 victory, finish off a first-round sweep of the Pelicans in the West. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 24 points, 10 rebounds, a double-double lead the Thunder. They move on to the Western Conference second round. They'll face the winner of the Clippers and Mavericks. That series tied 2 apiece. You got Kawhi Leonard, who I don't think is going to play again in the playoffs with the inflammation in his knee. You've got, for the Mavericks, you've got a banged-up Luka Doncic. So the Thunder are sitting here going, just go ahead and beat each other up for a while, and we'll get some rest, and we'll be good to go. Plus, the Thunder are the youngest team in the NBA playoffs. Tonight, the 3 Game 5s in the East. The Knicks have a 3-1 lead on the Sixers. Tip-off at 6 o'clock in New York on TNT, followed by the Pacers, who are up 3-1 at the Bucks at 8:30. Don't know if Lillard's going to go tonight or not, but it sounds like Giannis is out again. On NBA TV at 7 o'clock, the Cavs and the Magic are tied to 2 apiece with Game 5 in Cleveland. What stands out to you here when you look at the NBA playoffs, which, by the way, you know, injuries, my youngest was like, he saw somebody get hurt the other day, or no, he knew Leonard wasn't playing. Oh, and he saw that Lillard wasn't playing. So my 10-year-old, he says, every year in the playoffs, all the good players get hurt, Dad. And I said, last year, that was very true. I said, this year, not so much. Now, all of a sudden, you got Murray, who is still playing, but he's hurt a little bit. And Caldwell Pope got hurt a little bit. And Doncic is banged up with a knee. And then Lillard and Giannis are out, or we think Lillard, we don't know if Lillard's going to play tonight. Halliburton had back spasms. He's a young player for the Pacers. And then last night, the Celtics, who, you know, getting Porzingis was a great pickup, but, you know, can he stay healthy? He stayed healthy all year long. Celtics had the best record in the NBA. Porzingis was a big reason for that, because they can play 5 out, stretch the floor, can't double anybody with Tatum and Brown. And then Derek White last night goes nuts. He had 38 points and 8 3-pointers for the Celtics, who beat the Heat 102-88 to go up 3-1 in that series. But Porzingis had a calf injury. Some people think it could be worse than that, and that would be a tremendous blow for the Boston Celtics. And so, you know, when you go into the playoffs, when you talk about the NFL playoffs, Major League Baseball playoffs, NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, you think you know it, right? Well, I'm going to predict this. What you can't predict is somebody getting hurt. Yeah. You cannot predict if this is going to happen, that's going to happen. You have no idea. And sometimes it's just a battle of attrition. And you got Kawhi Leonard, who seems to be out every year for the playoffs, it seems, ever since he won a title with the Raptors. Giannis now, 2 straight years, he's been hurt at the wrong time. Embiid, of course, has not been 100% the last couple of years, and he's not 100% now. And that is part of the equation. Now, I guess the solution to this is very clear. none of these players play at all in the regular season and you just get ready to go and get paid for April and May basketball. Maybe that's the way to go. And I think all of this stuff does lend to they're going to do even more load management. I really think. And I, you know, some people could argue load management maybe isn't helping, but I don't think it's helping per se. But at the same time, I think it'll lend to the people going, see, this is why we have load management. You could argue it both ways. But at the end of the day, if you're going to win a championship, you need to stay healthy. Look at the Kansas City Chiefs. They've stayed healthy, relatively healthy, when they won their Super Bowls. And the one Super Bowl they lost, what happened?
They were not healthy on the offensive line, that's for sure.
Their left tackle and right tackle are out for the season, okay? That is huge. And then they had depth with Nick Allegretti stepping in for Joe Tooney. If they didn't have anything good behind Tooney, the Chiefs probably don't win the Super Bowl against the Niners. So having depth is very, very important. And some teams have it. Some teams load up on their big two or three players and then think they can fill in the rest and see the Suns, who are absolutely strapped for a long time now. They can't trade hardly anybody. They're stuck where they are. They can't get mid-level exceptions, and they just got swept. So you sold out your soul to the devil, and now you're going to go
for a first-round sweep.
Yeah, you got swept by a younger team that developed and drafted people.
You have one after this year. You have no first-round picks again until 2030.
Reminds me of the Nets and what they did years ago.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy to see all these injuries, though, and I think the way that they treat their players during the season is actually hurting them when they get to the postseason in this time of year, because they're not playing. I just think that, you know, repetition is key, and
they're not used to playing. Not used to playing 42 minutes every other night.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then people would argue, well, that's the wear and tear. They wouldn't be able to even go if they played that much in the regular season. But I could argue. And I would say the intensity of the regular season versus the postseason is something that you can't simulate either.
Yeah, and it's like if you're taking even 5-6 games of an 82-game season off, and then you're only going to play 30 maybe minutes in those games.
Right.
And now you're going to the playoffs where you're required to probably play 40 to 45 in some of these cases, right? Because that's what they need from you if you want to win. And so I just feel like, you know, just continuity is so key, and not only for, you know, mentally, but for your body as well. I mean, if you're going to go out there and play 40 one night and then take a week off and not play, and then go and play again, and I just don't know if that's – I don't think that's helping you when you get to this point of the year when you absolutely have to be playing to help your team win. But it's wild to see all, like, you know, a game where Dame and Giannis are both not playing.
Yeah.
But the Bucks still – you know, compete, obviously, but it's just like you don't have the guys you need.
During the regular season, like I noticed this, and this happens with other players as well, especially the star players. During regular season, for instance, the Warriors, Steph Curry will sit the first 3 or 4 minutes of the fourth quarter, come in about the 8-minute mark. If it's a game that they can win or whatever, he might stay on the bench longer. Okay, so he's used to having an extended break at the end of the third quarter going into part of the fourth. You don't have that in the playoffs because you're going to play more. You're not going to play 4 minutes. You're not going to sit 4 minutes, start the fourth quarter in a big game in the playoffs. And you're right. I think the continuity for your body is important. So people could come back and say, well, see, we need even more load management because these guys still break down. And there are many older veteran Major League Baseball pitchers that believe that the why players break down now is they're trying to throw way too hard. They lift too many weights. And they've also said that they've been pampered so much to where they're not used to high-stress innings or taking on all that load and so forth and so on. And then others say that, you know, these kids are throwing pitches they shouldn't be throwing at a younger age, putting so much torque on their arm to throw so hard that that's why they blow out their arms. And so there's the overreaction maybe to protecting arms from the standpoint of, you know, overprotecting your arm doesn't mean you don't throw some innings or a whole bunch of pitches in a game. It means don't just throw a changeup and a fastball. Don't be throwing a curveball and a slider, you know, and don't try to throw 90 every single pitch. And, you know, some of the best pitchers of all time understood that. You know, Greg Maddux understood that. Tom Glavin understood that. Of course, those weren't power pitchers, but Justin Verlander learned how to do it once he blew out his arm. He learned how to become a real pitcher. Nolan Ryan had to become, you watch a documentary on Nolan Ryan, The Express. He was a thrower and he became a pitcher. Because he had to understand at some point, I've got to change. I can't throw 102 all the time. Yeah. It seemed like he could, but so that is part of the equation when it comes to these athletes, is the wear and tear on their bodies, but also how they, like you said, how are they treated? How do they go through treatment? What do they take to recover? But then, and Curt Schilling has said this before, and I'll never forget him saying this. He said, people look at the postseason baseball and they go, well, why can't these starters go more than six innings in the playoffs when they could go seven or eight in a regular season? And he said, and people go get up caught up in pitch counts. So, well, he threw 115 pitches eight times, but now you're going to pull him out with 85 in the sixth inning of the ALCS. And Curt Schilling said, listen, 115 pitches during a regular season game where your season's not on the line in high-pressure situations is not even close to comparable to 85 pitches. Because you're throwing harder, you're putting more torque on your arm, you're trying to be even more fine with everything you're doing. There's the mental stress of it all as well. Mm-hmm. And so it is the high-leverage situations. That's why there's only certain people that can handle clutch moments. There's only certain people that can handle pressure. High leverage situations. There's not every pitcher can be a closer.
Yeah.
Not every guy can be Jamal Murray. We know that. Yeah. Jamal Murray is a special breed because he's clutch. Certain guys are clutch that might not even be Hall of Famers, but they're clutch. Some guys are clutch at the line. Robert Ory's clutch. Sometimes, you know, guys are 85% foul shooters, can't make the free throws in the final seconds of a key game, but a guy at 68% knocks him down. Certain people just have this DNA that they can deliver in the clutch. They can block stuff out. They're okay with the higher pressure situations, and other guys can't handle it. And so that's what makes those players unique. And the other thing is, some guys have the bodies, maybe they take care of themselves in different ways, that can withstand playing in this situation 44 minutes a game in the playoffs instead of 33 like they do in the regular season. Some guys, they just can't, their body can't adapt to it, or you know, it is interesting to me. You're worried about your investment, right? That's what these owners typically do with these players. It's all about all the money they've invested. Money has hurt the game. There's no doubt from that standpoint. So you talk about an investment. Like you buy a brand new car. Trust me, I know I got a vehicle one time. I'm parking further away so nobody is an idiot and door dings my door, okay? And opens the door and scratches my vehicle and whatever. Well, that's no different than you're an investment in a high-priced NBA player or any athlete for that matter. You're going to protect them a little bit more because they're a high-pricey investment, correct? So what happens when your guy gets nicked up during the regular season? The first thing you want to do is what? Shut him down.
Yeah.
Shut him down, make sure he's ready to go for the playoffs. But then what happens when you get to the playoffs and it's all about winning it all? You know what typically happens? All those rules are throughout the window. And I remember even last year Kawhi Leonard played in the playoffs some. And I was watching him play 42, 44 minutes. There was an overtime game. He played like 48 minutes. I'm like, this isn't going to work for Kawhi Leonard, because he went from playing 28 minutes to 32 minutes a game and playing, he wouldn't even play back-to-backs, to all of a sudden in the playoffs, granted they weren't back-to-backs, but you're playing in 45 minutes. What happened to protecting your investment? Oh, that's right. When the championship is there, the heck with all of the precautionary measures, because it's all about winning it all. So you don't care that much about the player's health. You care about it during the regular season because you're trying to win a ring, and then you get to the playoffs and you wear these guys down, which I understand to an extent, and I know the players obviously want to try to win it, so they're going to go out there and try to play as well, but I think it goes back to you, the continuity for your body. When you're playing 34 minutes in the NBA regular season game, now all of a sudden you got to play 45 in an NBA game at a high level, a whole different level of intensity like Schilling talks about in baseball. Your body eventually just, I mean, I don't think your body can adapt to that and do that well. I know there's exceptions. Guys that play probably, you know, Anthony Edwards plays a lot of minutes. Now, he's young. It's not phasing him.
Yeah. And I'm talking to what I was talking about is the regular load management. When you add what you're talking about, like a guy that gets shut down because they don't want him to get hurt, and they let him take a couple months off here just to get healthy, that's even worse going in there and playing 44, 48 minutes a game.
Totally agree.
If it goes to overtime or double or whatever it might be. So, I'm not going to say there's no positives to load management because I've actually seen my team benefit from it when Tim Duncan got older. And so there are positives to it, but I think that it's kind of become an epidemic of people doing it and not maybe doing it with the right people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, your load management's great for an older person, right? There's no doubt that if they're not playing as many minutes, you try to get them fresh. Travis Kelce's a good example, right, that we were talking about earlier today. So I get the concept of it, but I think that if you're doing it with some of the, you know, these kids are less than 30. I call them kids because I'm 40, but these guys are less than 30 years old. Like, what are you load managing? Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
No, I agree with that.
But, you know, Kawhi needs to be load managed because he's got an injury history.
There are 48 minutes in an NBA game, 4 12-minute quarters. LeBron James isn't he 40 or almost 40?
Yeah, he's got to be almost. I don't think he's quite 40 yet.
He played 48 minutes last night. Anthony Davis played 40 out of 48. D'Angelo Russell played 40 out of 48. Michael Porter, who's younger, played 46 of 48. Aaron Gordon played 46 of 48. Jamal Murray, on a bad calf, played 40 of 48. Jokic played 41 of 48. During the regular season, those numbers are 10 minutes less.
Absolutely.
Which is almost a full quarter less of basketball every game. Think about that for a second. So you're adding a quarter of basketball to almost every single playoff game when you play, unless it's a blowout. Let me see if I can pull up another one here. Box score of the Heat that one will be misleading because that was a blowout.
Yeah.
Let's see here. New Orleans, Trey Murphy played 43 out of 48 minutes. Brandon Ingram, 39. That wasn't quite as clear. But there are many times we look at this. I know I've seen it with Steph Curry. All of a sudden he's playing 45 minutes, and he's playing 32 during the regular season. But LeBron would be the best example there, 44 of 48 at the age that he is. Now, he's a freak of nature. He's been able to avoid completely breaking down with all the extra wear and tear on his body because it goes so deep in the playoffs every single year, except this year not so much. But and they got a bad draw taking on the Nuggets. Lakers, I think, would have done some damage had they been in a different draw. But it is what it is. That's why the regular season is important, contrary to what some people may say.
That's why we said they would probably be better off not winning that play-in game.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's what a lot of people were talking about is, here I'll go to the Knicks in the Sixer game. Okay, the Knicks and the Sixers the other day. Josh Hart played 45 out of 48. Anobi played 47 of 48. Jalen Brunson played 43 of 48 minutes. Joel Embiid, after sitting for 2 months, played 44 out of 48 minutes. Yeah. You think that's good for Joel Embiid right now?
No.
The answer is no. And he was 7 of 19 from the floor. Tyrese Maxey, younger, 43 out of 48 minutes. Those are not normal minutes. And as you said, your body has to adapt. But can it adapt that quickly? Or if it does, to an extent, do you break down faster? Paul George, 43 out of 48 minutes the other day for the Clippers. Kyrie Irving, 44 out of 48. Doncic, 45 out of 48.
Yeah, and like George would be an example of when Kawhi can't play. That
he's
got to
play more.
Play even more.
Harden played 40. Yeah. He don't always play 40.
Yeah,
that's another example of what we're talking about. I could keep going on and on. You know, here's a good one. I guarantee you this one's a good one. The Suns, an elimination game, trying to keep their season alive. And Durant played 46. He only sat for a minute 30.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant played 46 minutes. Booker played 45. And Durant is up there.
Yeah.
That's not normal. Anthony Edwards played 41 and Durant played 47. Why? Because the Suns had to win. And it is, I mean, I think that I'm all for the stars playing as much as they do. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I do think that it contributes to some of these injuries that we've seen. Now, Giannis, that happened before the playoffs started. But you look at, the Porzingis, has that contributed to his injury? What about Dame Lillard, is that contributed to his injury? You know, how many minutes he's playing? I don't know for sure. It's something that people, obviously are smarter than me that can go ahead and study. But I'll give you the best one. Embiid would never play 44 minutes in a regular season game.
No.
Never. Ever. The coach would be fired if he played him that much. So we'll continue to follow all of that. NHL playoffs last night for you ice hockey fans.
Tampa's net is empty. The steal! Verhaeghe! Bingo! And the Panthers are going to move on to the second round.
Florida Panthers moving on to the second round. They were dominant 6-1 win over the Lightning, and they win game 5. They win the series 4-1, and the West Stars beat the Knights, tied their series with with Las Vegas at 2 apiece. 4-2 was that final. 4 game 5s on the schedule tonight. NHL playoffs in the East. The Bruins are up 3-1 on the Maple Leafs game 5 at 6 o'clock tonight in Boston. Carolina Hurricanes have a 3-1 lead over the New York Islanders. They host game 5 at 6:30. In the West, the Avs of Colorado lead the Winnipeg Jets 3-1. They'll play at 8:30 tonight. Winnipeg, chance for the Habs to close that out. And the Vancouver Canucks have a 3-1 lead on the Predators as the puck drops at 9 o'clock tonight in Vancouver. And our final note, the SEC and the Big Ten are at the center of developing a revenue-sharing plan with players that would redefine college athletics for the future. The still unrefined proposal currently utilizing the name Modern Model would not only share revenue with players, but also perhaps help settle the House versus NCAA lawsuit that goes to trial in January of next year. The antitrust lawsuit is a class action complaint alleging the NCAA and power conferences have conspired to suppress athletes' compensation. The lawsuit continues to be the top hurdle for programs in planning college athletics' futures. Settlement money alone could cost each university between $15 and $20 million. Athletic directors have been frustrated trying to figure out how to rearrange their budgets or otherwise account for a payment of that size. ESPN reported Monday night that the Power Four conferences are in deep discussions regarding a revenue sharing plan. It is not clear where that revenue would come from or how it would be distributed. Athletes have come a long way in college sports, have they not? Because now you've made this happen. You got the NIL, and now you've made this happen with a lawsuit that's out there, and they're like, we don't want to go that way. The big conference, like, we want to nip this in the bud as soon as possible. And these athletic directors and presidents of universities, they want to know what their budgets are and what they can spend, what they can't spend. And otherwise, you are in limbo. Think about it. If you want to go out and spend, but you don't know how much money is in your checking account, your savings account, how much money you actually have and that you possess, and you go out and buy a car, do you know if you have enough money? That's not a good way to live.
No.
And so it's called budgeting. And if you don't budget, you're probably going to be doomed to fail. But I can see why they want to get this figured out as soon as possible. But we're now talking about revenue sharing with college athletes.
Yeah.
The whole landscape has changed tremendously in the last few years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't even know where you go with it. You know, it's like I get the concept of it. There are a lot of college athletes, though.
Yes, there are. There are many, many.
So like, is there a certain number over the whole country that gets divvied out, or is
they
it
were
just
saying
based
that
by
they were? I read today that somebody said that there would be about 7,000 athletes that should have something from this.
Yeah.
How much money is it per person? I have no idea.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I tell you, we talked about it a long time ago. There's going to be pros and cons with all this. I think there have been a few more pros than some people thought there would be. And I think that college sports has done maybe better than some people thought, at least initially, with all of this. But as I said a long time ago when we were talking about this initially, it's going to change college athletics forever. And it's a landscape. The landscape has changed, and Pandora's box has been opened. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. It'll be forever changed.
Yeah.
College athletics, as you know it, will never go back to the way it was.
No.
No way.
You can't.
No. Once you start getting money, you're not giving it back.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.